That's the music of Steve Goodman from a new release, Affordable Art. He's been gone a long time. Now, for the third time on this show, because they have a third book out, it is my great pleasure to welcome in Bob Carr and Dirk Johnson. Dirk and I were colleagues in the crazy newspaper business, and he has proved himself then at the Sun-Times and at the New York Times to be one of the most talented reporters and especially writers. That's often a weird combination. You don't often get them together, only occasionally. He and Bob have... How did you two meet? Hi, Bob. Good to see you. Hi, Dirk. Good to see you.
Thanks for those
kind words. Oh, no, you're my constant. If you publish a book, and they're always interesting, you're booked on the show. Remind me how the two of you met, will you, Dirk?
It was through a mutual friend who was doing some work for Bob, Michael McMillan. And we had a cup of coffee at the airport and talked about life in general and some of our past mishaps and hit it off. And it's been a great collaboration.
Bob, you have had one of the most, and Dirk, I'm sure you'll admit this too, one of the most interesting lives. seriously, from your, you know, sort of not impoverished youth, but a youth, and this goes to the point of your latest book too, where you needed a helping hand. Yes?
Yes.
What was wrong in your youth?
Just having a parent in the house that was very destructive to his six children. And a mother who was at the opposite end of that spectrum. It was very confusing to grow up in a house with two bedrooms and nine people living in the house. It was with a father who was just not there for you. And when he was, you wish he wasn't.
Yeah. How did you wind up being saved? You were smart. Let's start with that. You were a smart kid.
Well, I don't know how to answer that question. I always knew there was something wrong. And when I got out of the house at the age of 17, you know, things all came together fairly quickly about what happened. And I was just able to figure it out better than my siblings, frankly.
But you needed help. And that was sort of the nature of the first book on which you collaborated.
My seventh grade teacher, I think this is really the point I should
have
made.
Yeah, you too.
My seventh grade teacher had been a double-A professional baseball player. I was a great White Sox fan back in the late 50s. And he became a school teacher and was my seventh grade homeroom teacher and social studies teacher. And he talked about there being another world out there.
Yeah.
And he set the pace, and that's what we're all about, is mentoring these young people. And that's where I learned that from, and I'm not sure where Dirk learned his from, but I'm sure he did from someone.
Well, but in first hearing this story, Dirk, and putting it down on paper in your first book, Through the Fires, there's a $250 loan, if my memory serves.
A scholarship. Bob was a senior in high school.
Yeah.
And much to his surprise, he was awarded a $250 scholarship by the local women's club. As a kid, Bob didn't even know there was a women's club in town. And he said that it made him feel so good and recognized that he vowed that if I ever have extra money, I'm going to reach out to help kids that have come from circumstances like mine. And it took some decades, and Bob hit it very big.
I never understood. Yeah, you know, I certainly admire success on any level, but I never understood what Bob did. You know what I mean? It's a you know, financial kind of, what is it? What was it?
Payment processing.
Part of it was being in the right place at the right time. I suspect you may remember the old credit card slips, back the paper slips when you would buy something with your credit card.
Far too
store.
Well, Bob. Far
exactly.
Too well.
Well, I was right there at the right time when that paper transaction was converting to an electronic transaction. And so my company became the fifth largest payment processor in America, which is just hard to believe.
Well, it's an amazing... Well, it's one of those businesses that you think, wait a minute, why do you need this business? But you became incredibly successful. The great point of it is, and what Dirk must have really appealed to you, is that that altruistic nature, that whole notion that someone did something for you. This women's club basically gave you $250 and you said, that's unbelievable. It empowered you in a lot of ways. And you said to yourself, if I ever make it, I'm going to give back. I would hazard to say, Dirk, and we're cynical newsmen, that for every 10,000 people who said that at some point,
right,
none except this guy followed
right,
through.
Right, right. Is that, and all those that, years later.
Yeah.
One of the things that is most striking when you're around Bob is that he really has very little care about material things. I don't think you much care. Bob doesn't much care what kind of car he drives. The idea of having a private jet strikes him as ridiculous. But when he's in a room with kids that have come through difficult circumstances, they really, really connect. He is not just another rich guy.
Or another do-gooder.
That's right.
I do have to say, there are other business people, men and women, who are generous with their funds and so on. I don't think it's 1 out of 10,000, but it might be.
Oh, I think it's one. Oh no, I think it's 1 out of 10,000. And I think, you know, okay, the Bill and Melinda Gates, I'm sure they do a lot of good things with their money, but you're my 1 out of 10,000. What, when you decided, were you doing things all along, Bob, during your career, or did it happen after? And I think there's a very important thing to sit down with someone like Dirk and share your life and have it on paper. That's empowering, too. Was that the motivating force for starting all the other things you've started?
You know, I was one of these guys who worked for 25 years and then was an overnight success.
Yeah, right, sure.
And so, sure. You know, I had to make a decision one day of what to do with a lot more money than I ever could imagine ever needing. And it was, I tried doing a couple of things. I built Lockport, Illinois is where I'm from, and we built a park in downtown Lockport, and that was a several million dollar project. It changed the town. I loved doing that. I'm very interested in history. I was able to buy Woodrow Wilson's house and been involved in other historical things. I was in the city council in Lockport for a while. But having all this money just really was an overnight thing, and I hadn't thought a heck of a lot about it, except that I did want to give back to the Women's Club. And that's how it started, by giving them a check for $5,000 to pay them back for my $250.
Did they know who you were? Did they have a record of having given you the $250 at some point?
Well, they do now, because
I'll bet they do now. Yeah, but I'm sure they do now. That's a nice thing to do. But when trying to figure out what to do, there are a lot of places that need financial help.
Amen.
And you started something on your own. You didn't say, well, maybe I could give to some, youth basketball program or youth baseball program or the White Sox Junior All-Stars program or something. How did you conceptualize what became your sort of...
Well, this is where I think my growing up situation, you know, really put it into perspective for me, because I knew how valuable it was to get an education. And by starting off giving other high school kids scholarship funds like I received back in 63, it became almost an immediate attraction to these kids, because they finally had somebody that recognized them. And we've been doing this now thousands of times throughout the country over these last 10, 15 years. And our model, our program works, and it works because I think I have a deep appreciation for what many of these kids have gone through.
Well, especially with your third book. Well, we got to take a commercial break. See, I'm so into you, I blew the commercial by like 3 minutes. We'll be back with Bob Carr and Dirk Johnson to talk about not only their second book, but their third book. And I will tell you an anecdote about something I saw on TV tonight that is so germane on 60 Minutes to what this book is about and what you're doing. Well, thank you, Mr. Roger Badish. My great old friend and colleague, Dirk Johnson, and I like to consider him a new friend, Bob Carr, have collaborated on three books so far. Through the Fires, An American Story of Turbulence, Business Triumph, and Giving Back, which is basically Bob's biography. sort of as with Dirk's help, and Dirk is a very talented writer. The second was Working Class to College, The Promise and Peril Facing Blue Collar America, which was a very provocative book. In the midst of this, Bob started what is now a public charity called Give Something Back, which is meant to pay the college, in essence, to pay college tuition for kids who can't afford it. I will tell you tonight, mostly kids whose parents have been incarcerated or who are homeless, and the numbers for that, Dirk, I was stunned.
Yeah, or foster kids. Yeah.
Or foster kids. Tell me some of the numbers. They're really stunning and chilling at the same time.
There are 2.7 million kids in the United States that have experienced parental incarceration. On any given day, there are roughly 500,000 kids in foster care. And then there are many that are uncounted, that are in some sort of informal situation.
Sure.
But don't have a permanent home.
Well, we hear about some of these frighteningly and with some frequency on, you know, when there's a crisis, when one of the kids dies or something. On 60 Minutes tonight, and I just want to bring this up because it goes to some of the stories that you told. This, the last book is First Chance, How Kids with Nothing Can Change Everything, and it's about 2 years of you, Dirk, going around and talking to children who are benefiting from...
Both Bob and I, yeah.
You went together. That's great. It must have been at some points. I'll get into specifics. But today on 60 Minutes, they had a story about a kid from Nebraska named Sean, S-H-O-N, Hapwood, who, you know, was a screw-up in school. He drank himself out of 1 year of a basketball scholarship somewhere. He then drank himself out of a couple years in the Navy. He then got hooked up with a guy who thought it would be a good idea to rob little banks because they wouldn't get caught. Mm. He got convicted and thrown in prison for, I think, 20 years. In his time in prison, he became a kind of a clerk in the library, started reading law books, literally wrote a brief, submitted to help another convict, and then went all the way to the Supreme Court. And so that wound up attracting a lot of attention. He eventually, through some really good mentors and people helping him, was able to become an attorney. He's now a professor at Georgetown University.
What a story.
It's a great story. But you found stories not dissimilar as you two went out to see, hey, how's this? Basically, it was to see how everything was going, wasn't it?
There was, as an example, a kid named Ricardo Dale. Was severely abused by a babysitter, and ran away from home, was homeless, and when he came to the attention of Give Something Back, and he got a scholarship through the program, and he has now been elected to the Board of Trustees on the college as a student representative, as a senior. It's just remarkable for somebody that had been through the travails that he had.
See, what both of you gentlemen seem to have, and you put your money where your mouth is, Bob Carr, is an unrelenting faith in humanity. I don't mean to make much of it. I really mean that. I mean, you have a of the faith in the resilience of the human spirit, that no matter how much someone is beaten up, and some of these kids have been beaten up beyond all reason, that with help, they can triumph. I mean, you do believe that, right, Bob?
I believe to my core that by going through these very painful upbringings, that kids who get something, just a little bit of help, they grab onto it, and they're receptacles of all the information they can get. And the subtitle of our book about kids who are lost can do anything, we have example after example after example of that. And I just think the nature of going through all this pain and trouble creates a person, when they realize they can break through all that, that they have a way to get through it. It empowers them to help others and to do what I've been trying to do, you know, with my career. And I really think that some of these kids, like Ricardo, is a perfect example. Though we have many, many others. These kids become the leaders. I've given three graduation speeches where the student speaker, selected by the students in the college, were our kids.
Wow.
And these kids become leaders. It's really a very exciting thing. And one of the problems we try to focus on is, let's stop setting low standards. Let's raise the bar. You kids can get A's and B's. You have to get a B average minimum to be in our program.
How does one apply to the program?
Usually it's a high school counselor that knows the kind of
situations,
and we want kids who have gone through, we want the kids who've gone through the worst of times, and they just have a little bit of spark of determination. And we give them some tools, and it turns them around very quickly. We picked 222 kids for our scholarships 3 years ago in 2016. Of those 222 kids, which are mostly homeless and children of incarcerated parents, 100% of those kids graduated high school, and 215
out of
222 are going to college in the fall, 97%. And these are all kids that could have been written off in ninth grade, and we gave them a scholarship.
Well, there are kids who were written off in ninth grade, but for you and the foundation, which is now a public charitable foundation, Give Something Back. I'm assuming it's givesomethingback.org.
It's actually Give Something Back, a New Jersey nonprofit.
Oh, okay. Well, you know.
To be technical, but we had trademark
issues.
No,
should be technical about it. You should be technical. Some of the stories that you encounter have got to be, for both of you, initially heartbreaking. Because we now live in an era when prisons are warehouse. I mean, they're warehouses. And some of the kids and some of the parents, probably, you must say to yourself, wait a minute, this parent doesn't belong in jail.
So much of the time. Almost all of the problems that led to imprisonment are rooted in addiction, particularly with the mothers.
Yeah.
And the prisons have become the mental health providers. In as much as they provide treatment.
As much as they can, right. Yeah.
But there are many prisons that are actually former mental health hospitals. Logan Women's Prison in Lincoln, Illinois, is an example.
We got to take one quick last break, and then we'll carry on with these gentlemen all the way to the end of the show. You really do, ladies and gentlemen, need to get all three books. I mean, I would really, really recommend Through the Fires to be followed by Working Class to College to be followed by the latest book, First Chance. I mean, you need to read about your story, and then you need to read about your activism, and then you need to read, as you do in First Class, about this activism in action, what it is doing, what it is meaning. Now, get a pencil. I'm going to give you two websites. The first is giveback.ngo. Right?
Yes.
Thank you, Bob. The other, where you can get these three books, because I think these books should be read as a kind of trilogy, though I know there will be another one because I need you back on this radio show, is Robert O. Carr. That's robertocarr.com. That's how you can get all three books. People obviously listening, Bob, want to know what they might be able to do. What can they do? On their own. I mean, I think some people want to help, but don't know how.
Well, for every $20,000 that we receive, we can put one kid through college.
Is that right?
Which is a great bargain, and that's one of the motivations for us doing what we're doing. But there's five things that a person can do, I mean, at different levels. They can adopt a child, and lots of folks do that, and it's such a wonderful thing all around. Secondly, they can become a foster parent. We need more good foster parents in this country.
Good being the operative word.
Absolutely.
Here. And we need more good people at the Department of Children and Family Services, too.
We certainly do. Next, they can become a CASA. A CASA is a court-appointed special advocate. Every county in America virtually is connected to a CASA chapter. And we've been encouraging this, and we have been able to get many, many people to look into CASA. And by being a CASA, it's a volunteer position, but the CASA is the representative of a child. And a child goes into court, and the parents are fighting with each other, and nobody's looking out for the child. And the CASA, that's their job. And it's such a tremendous program.
Oh, so rewarding.
And there are hundreds of thousands of kids going through this issues with the court, and they don't have an advocate. So that's a desperate need for that all across the country. If you don't have time to be a CASA, be a mentor. Get involved with these many. There's many mentoring organizations around the country. We have them in seven states ourselves. And the other thing is the children that we work with, we pick ninth graders primarily, but if these kids can get some help in middle school or even more elementary school, reach out and work with other nonprofits and help get these kids the mentoring that they need. So those are the things that people can do to help a lot.
Dirk Johnson, working with this man must have changed your life in a number of ways.
In a lot of ways, yes. It's I have, as anybody who knows me has heard, I have the deepest admiration for Bob and for what he's chosen to done to do with his time and his wealth, and it's not, I think, what almost any other person would do to continue to work that hard at it.
And when you see, you know, being on the front lines, especially with the latest book, First Chance, all of these books, again, published by University of Illinois Press, going out and interviewing these young people who are benefiting from this, it's got to be terribly emotional for you, because you're getting and you got out of them in this really good, very sort of introspective stories. That's a hard thing to do with young people sometimes.
Well, absolutely. First of all, they're young, they're living in chaos. So that to make an appointment with somebody for a week from Tuesday, for kids that don't know what their life is going to look like that afternoon, is very, very difficult. And then they open up. I give credit to the kids who were willing to speak on the record with their names.
And trust, there's a level of trust that they have to develop. You two are, as I can attest, both very likable guys, but I haven't told you my inner secrets yet, but you do. What you get from these kids, there's a real level of honesty to these stories they tell.
And their parents as well.
That's true, exactly. Yeah.
Who have... one of the main figures in the book, Mercedes Marquez, mother Angie, has struggled all her life with heroin. And she sat there with a plastic crucifix around her neck and said, "People say I'd never stick a needle in my arm. People say I'd never steal. People say I'd never stand on a corner and sell myself. All my nevers came true." This is not a bad person.
Yeah.
And that was the case so often, that these were families that were just struggling terribly.
Well, what comes through in many of these stories, and you can address this too, Bob, is that human beings are incredibly fragile.
They are very fragile, but they also can be very resilient.
No question.
And what we try to do is give them the tools to help them to become resilient. Motivation is much more important to the success of a student in school than their innate ability. We all know PhDs who are, working for Uber. Not that that's a bad job,
right?
But it's certainly overeducated. So by giving the kid, the student, the tools that they need to deal with it, I think, and giving them the hope of a college education. When we started the program, we gave money just like everybody else did.
Well, because that seems always, if you got it, the easiest thing to do.
And it is the easiest thing, and it was great. The kids are great. Some of them are some of my best friends to this day. But then we realized, these kids are seniors in high school. It's too late. Let's go down into 8th grade, 7th grade, 6th grade, and pick kids then. And that program worked really well. So we went from giving money to giving mentoring. Then we went to giving hope. That's why we're telling these kids in junior high and ninth grade, you're going to go to college if you get a B average. And we only had seven kids that, out of 222 that didn't get a B average. And this is
amazing
out of a high school, one of the poorest high schools in the state of New Jersey.
You know, there's that old, you know, what you two are doing is, and to borrow a phrase from Ernest Hemingway, you're making people, you're helping them become strong at the broken places. That's a phrase of Hemingway's. And a lot of these people are broken through really no fault of their own,
right,
the fragility of human nature. But what you're doing is you're making them strong at those places.
And these kids become leaders for the other kids in the program, and they gain strength from another. It's palpable to be with these kids in a group.
What's your next book, fellas? When can I book you? 2 years from now? Bob, I just have to say congratulations. You're getting married a week from Saturday to this beautiful woman sitting in the studio.
Guy.
You're a lucky guy in a lot of ways.
That's for sure.
I think, Dirk, you are too, to have hooked up in this. I mean, I keep telling you to go to Robert O. Carr, the website, to buy this trilogy, which I'm calling the Carr-Johnson trilogy, because your life is fascinating. Your ideas about college education, which you could transform completely, and it's very, very topical given how, you know, college screws, frankly, kids from who don't have the means to go. And it's a rigged system.
It's very unfortunate. Yeah. There's 45 million kids in this country, not kids, people who have started college and dropped out.
Yeah.
And now they've got to pay off, most of them, student loans with minimum wage.
It's horrible. And you've seen in, you know, recent headlines the way people try to game that system. And then you can finish your reading this summer, your summer reading, with First Chance, which is just a book about small all because of you guys, but small triumphs over tragedies, near tragedies, and messed up lives.
It's remarkable to see what these young people have achieved.
Well, and you do it. I mean, you develop both of your level of trust with these kids and their parents to tell these stories with power. It's an ongoing, I've known you for a really long time, but it's an ongoing pleasure to know your new bride, and to keep reading you. I hope there's a fourth. We can have a quartet.
You bet, Rick. Thank
All
you
right,
so
you
much.
Guys.
Thank
keep
you
up
so
great
much,
work. Oh, no, my pleasure. Dirk Johnson and Bob Carr. Go to robertocarr.com to buy the books. Thank you very much for listening. Dan Long, you're the world's greatest engineer. Ro Coleman, you're the world's greatest producer. Did you say yes, thank you, or what did you say? Nah, no, I'm not. Coming up is Carl Amari and his fabulous show. So, thanks a lot for listening. See you next week. Watch for Chicago's Very Own Stories with Mike and Joe. That's Micah Mater and Joe Donlan. Weeknights at 9 on WGN TV News. It is 11 o'clock on the button. And